Welcome back to Rain on Your Parade with J.L. Covan. I'm J.L. Covan here with producer Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hi, everybody. How you doing? Hi, J.L. How's things going?
Things are not great. I just took down one sleeve of Trader Joe's chocolate hazelnut cookies.
I know. I was watching in the monitor. It was a sight to be seen.
Well, they did, like, you know, often people see me eat and it's like, you know, cookies are Hershey's Kisses to me.
Yeah, right.
Nobody nibbles on a Hershey Kiss. I just throw those cookies down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those weeks last week, I think, and I think the response was very strong to the Springsteen / Steve Van Sant episode.
I think people were loving it, yeah. Frankly. I think it was I was really happy with the response. We got a lot of comments on the YouTube, which if you're watching on YouTube, please throw some comments and engage. It always helps the show. But I was loving what people's response was to your Steve Van Zandt costume, which I've been showing everybody because it's true commitment and true insanity. It's just impressive and repulsive at the same time.
Yeah, but it's like I feel after listening to Mike Coscarelli rules, yes. I feel about comedy the way you feel about your dick. Just show it. Where's the shame? Just let it out. Like let the people enjoy it. There's is not a time for being coy or yeah. for being embarrassed. Like these are things that bring joy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't speak for you, but I'm assuming.
Yeah, yes. So, showing my cock to people. Yeah. You know, consensually.
Well, okay. I mean, I guess if we're going to go woke all of a sudden, I thought this was an alpha male podcast.
Vinny!
Vinny. Vinny's late. He had to do something in Bayonne. I think he's helping at his uncle's bakery for a little bit.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness, the it's like, I remember doing a video. I think I shared it with you, but it was like, it didn't get a ton of views, but it was a guy... I went to get cookies on around Christmas time from my local Italian bakery.
Yes.
And I got a snowman cookie. I thought, oh, this will be funny if I make a big deal of it being called a snow person cookie, which it was not. But I thought, isn't this kind of a Fox News hysteria sort of story?
Right.
So I did a thing where the angry, you know, the Vinny type character, I think it was his cousin. It might have been his cousin Salvatore, was doing a, you know, they took away the genitals of the snowman cookie. Mm-hmm. Of course, snowman cookies never have genitals.
Right.
So I paired a cannoli to the snowman and then gobbled the phallic symbol of the cannoli to show what a man I was and that I wasn't going to let the wokes destroy my cookies.
Right, the wokes.
And I sent this to several friends. And then, of course, the one who veers into the, you know, anything veering from strong manhood is suspect, and I can't believe you did that. And he just sent me like a bug-eyed thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay, that's why you're not a comedian, I guess. Because to me, I didn't think, but what if people think I eat dick? You know what I mean? So like with Steve Van Sant, that's a no-brainer. It's like, did I find it fun? Yes. Did the audience find it fun? Yes. That's it. Yeah. That's comedy.
Yeah.
So the response for that, I don't know what the next thing, you know, that was obviously a big anticipated episode. So I don't know. But obviously, I'd love to do more stuff like that. The dream that I've told Laura like 5 times, she's already at the point of going, uh-huh.
Yeah.
And this is a recent dream. That's the thing. I repeat them so often, you know, once I get my, when the dog has a bone. And I just said, this is all if my social media accounts and everything were kind of working as they should. If I was pulling in $5,000 on Cameo, $5,000 on YouTube, and hopefully reaching thousands more with this podcast, because now my account, instead of reaching 8,000 people, is reaching its customary, you know, 150,000. I would do that every week. I would turn this into like one of those shows where it's just like, oh, if we do a Luka Doncic episode, I'm going to come in with like,
right,
dressed in a full Mavericks uniform.
Yes, right.
And like hobble around the studio like I'm an old man. But then like, you know, that's what I would love to do with the show. But obviously, you know, our audience is not yet at that critical mass where I feel like.
Well, this is why we need people on YouTube and on Apple Podcasts leaving reviews. I think if we are aware that we're going to have more engagement and more people paying attention and kind of expressing that they're interested in seeing us do better, because we will do better. We just don't have a lot of incentive right now. And I think that the JL Colvin fan base needs to kind of get a little fired up if they want to see this giant hazelnut cookie eating man dressed like Luka Doncic.
I am hazelnut. That would be my WWF name. Hey, my God, it's hazelnut.
Oh, my God. That's hazelnut's music.
He's got chocolate in his jeans, but it's something different. Oh, God, it's the Nutcracker. It's finishing move. But and obviously, let's be honest with my audience. They also know that I'm deranged enough, and I think you do, that their engagement won't, you know, I do have the eye of the delusional tiger.
I know. Yeah.
Where it's just like three people listened. You know, my comedy motto is very similar to Christ. Wherever two or more are gathered in my name, I will be there. But we'd love to add like a K or maybe a 10K onto that too.
A K would be very nice for both of us.
Oh, man. Well, guys, that's your plea. That was your Shriners Hospital.
Yeah, listen,
from me and Mike.
Listen, we know the audience. We know you guys are old.
You get this adorable blanket from JL if you listen to his podcast and leave a review.
Hey. Hi. I used to hate life. Then I listened to JL's podcast and I realized my life isn't so bad. Thanks, JL.
And if you listen now. Anyway, that's enough making fun of those adorable kids.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. We're going to be talking about baseball soon, which I know is a real love of yours.
Yeah.
You and, you and three other people, I think, under the age of 35.
At this point, I think that's true. I tried to get you to play fantasy baseball this year. You were like, no.
No, and I sent you I loved how you're so into baseball, you didn't get what I was doing when I sent you a picture of Sebastian Maniscalco with the most disgusted look on his face. I wanted to convey you want me to do fan, but it's not that I'm against it, and I appreciated the invite. I was just like, I don't join things knowing I'll be terrible or inattentive. Like, and that's the issue I have with baseball, is that it's a full commitment.
Yes. It's an everyday thing.
Yeah. Baseball. And I can't commit to that.
No, you were absolutely in the right. I mean, it's just to your point. It's very, I didn't realize how hard it would be to find anybody under the age of 60 to play fantasy baseball with us. It was difficult.
And they're like, is that anything like rotisserie league?
That's what my dad said.
Yeah,
I was like right on the border of asking my dad, and I was telling him about it. I was like, we're playing fantasy baseball. He's like, oh, so it's kind of like rotisserie then. I was like, yes, it is rotisserie, Dad. That is exactly what it is. It's rotisserie baseball. We just don't call it that anymore.
I'm going to adopt, I think I'm going to, just to be the old man that I am already, I think next football season, I'm going to be like, does anybody have any rotisserie football leagues that I can join?
What?
So, but I was thinking, obviously basketball is sort of my sport, although hockey, you know, I have really, you know, it helps that the Utah Jazz suck this year.
Yeah.
That's given me and suck on purpose. That's what's, I had never, the Jazz have had bad seasons, but they've never had the, we are on purpose sucking.
Yeah.
And they were like the sixth seed in the West about 40 games into the season. They've lost 13 in a row. And I think, I want to say like 19 of 2022 or 20 of 23. It's a total disaster. You know, starters are on the bet, you know, are injured with quad injuries.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's disgusting. It is like the tanking thing is really disgusting, but the worst thing is to tank for half a season.
Yeah.
So we're in the playoffs for the first half. So why are we tanking?
Right.
Like to get the ninth pick, like tank the whole way, get a top four pick.
Right.
Anyway. That opened up hockey to be like, oh, Jesus, the Rangers are really good.
Really good. Yeah.
And I'm like into it.
And they're getting into fights. They're exciting this year.
Matt Rempe.
Yeah. He's awesome.
Let's get him on the show.
He's your height. And he gets into a fight every single
game.
He's
tough.
Yeah.
But goofy. I'm the opposite. I'm deadly serious and a pussy.
Yeah.
Me and Rempe, like we are yin and yang of the 6'7", 6'8" community.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like a Saint Bernard who'll rip your face off.
Yeah.
And I'm like a Doberman who cuddles. And But Rempe, what's funny is we went in, I didn't see his game. He played in the outdoor game. That was his first game.
Yeah.
And then we went to see the Devils versus the Rangers in New Jersey.
Were you? Oh, okay. Got it.
We got in 3 minutes late, yeah. At which point anybody who knows me would know, oh boy, he's mad at Laura. She got there late. and he was getting thrown out of the game.
Yeah.
We didn't actually see him play.
Yeah.
We heard the crowd go, because
he threw the elbow, right?
That wasn't the elbow. That was in the next Devils game. Oh, this is the one where he boarded the guy like head first.
This is awesome, dude. This is so great that this is like, this is what, I know that we're not going to do the baseball episode, but like.
Not today.
Baseball needs this type of shit because it's like, I've always been, this has been the year that hockey has made its best run at stealing me away from basketball. Because the Rangers are really good. And it's also just like hockey's still a sport where it's like they haven't gotten all that shit out of the game. Like they're still fighting in the game. There's still tough guys in the game. There's still like, it's like when Rempe got into that fight with the Devils last week at the Garden.
Yes.
And they dropped the gloves and it was a 5-man fight on the ice. That's awesome. And I know that hockey's about more than fighting, but it's just that there's like, it makes you think that these games are important. And the NBA right now just has me thinking like, well, fuck the, I don't need to pay attention until April, you know?
Yeah. It's unlike baseball where you got to pay attention every game.
It's with you every day. It's with you every day. And when you play rotisserie baseball, you want to pay attention.
But yeah, so hockey, and it's funny, we talked about the NHL earlier this season. It's like they didn't heed my call for anything really.
Yeah.
But the game is great and it's amazing having watched so much. Like Laura and I may do like a half season plan next year with the Rangers.
That'd be awesome.
And like it has given me something to like care about and I've learned, like I've been in this, it's been fun because truth be told, like I'm learning the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like I watch the pregame and the halftime because these guys are really good with the Rangers, like the you know, Henrik Lundqvist and Steve Valiquette, especially Valiquette. He's almost like a hockey teacher. He's so like goobery and excited.
Yeah,
if you see him, it's like, God, like he's just very excited, and I'm like soaking it up.
And then Lundqvist is just smoking hot.
Well, Lundqvist, he's Hans Gruber that you want to fuck.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But he has the most generic, you could convince me he was an actor who just said do a European accent, doesn't matter from where, because he's always like, so what I'm really liking from Igor right now is he's playing the game so confidently.
That's fucking tough, really good.
But it's also, you see the defense rallying around him and really giving him the support that he needs. So that I think in the second period, you're going to see a better defense and that's going to lead to better offense. It's just like, what country is that?
Yeah.
It's just like Europe.
Yeah. White.
Okay. So new character next week. I'm coming in a $2,000 suit, a fake beard and a widow's peak that's just off center.
Yep. Yeah.
And so fans, be sure to subscribe in the comments and leave, you know, Venmo me, because we're going to need a lot for the Lundqvist character.
Yeah.
But thank you. I thought that was a good impression.
I thought it's great.
It's this weird, calm European.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't, are you from France, but also from Scandinavia with some Russian?
Yep. Yep.
What's going on there?
Well, he's Swiss. Is he Swiss?
I think he's Swiss. Or Swedish or Swiss.
He's either Swedish or Swiss. Either way.
Swiss I makes guess more it's sense because like, it's almost like a Federer. It's almost like, but a
is
more.
Is it Italian? Is it French?
Right.
It,
and it's like a more Euro Federer.
Federer,
it's a little bit there.
Yeah.
But like he's trying, I want to explain hockey, but also, would you like me to fuck you after the game?
All right.
Three people are going to be like, love the Lundqvist, JL. I didn't expect I was going to get Lundqvist content.
We spent the first like 12 minutes talking about how we should really like expand the reach of the audience.
Yeah,
talking about.
And like the NHL and baseball, we're actually just focusing on Mike's dad at this point. Leave a super thanks on YouTube, Mr. Coscarelli. Basketball.
Yeah.
And then we'll take a break because this is a brief point.
Yeah.
I hate watching Luka Doncic play.
Oh, so do I.
And even more than I criticized Jokic in like the first episode of this. Like I used him as an example of NBA affirmative action. And mm-hmm. I still think he gets away with some 90s level of physicality that other people don't. Mm-hmm. But Doncic, people were getting on me. I comment, you know, Facebook is a wonderful place to comment on like a fan, like a big page, and then just watch everybody try to dunk on you.
Yes.
And I just said, Luka Doncic is putting up huge stats, which it must be easy when you only play one half of the court. Right. I said, he's closer to Patrick Mahomes in terms of how he plays the game.
Yeah.
It's like he's ball dominant, like almost nobody we've ever seen.
Yeah.
He's got great talent, great skills, of course, great passer, great shooter, but he moves like slop. He fits in an NBA like shortened jerseys the way I would fit into them, it seems. Mm-hmm. And he plays. I saw him play in Utah, and they won. It was a closer game than it should have been if you're the Mavericks. But I haven't seen somebody play that little defense in an NBA game. That it was almost like, what's going on? Like, is this okay? Is this what happens when you go straight from like high school to Slovenia pro to the NBA? Like no coach has ever like dogged you for not playing like defense. And he is sort of the NBA is so much offense now. And mm-hmm. some of that is skill, but just like baseball made corrections with the home, you know, they took steroids. They raised the mound. Those were to increase offense again. I hate the shift.
Oh.
But in terms of like the juiced ball era, which was obviously the juiced player era, they made adjustments to that to like kind of even out. And I think basketball needs to make some adjustments because it's like, it's just video game at this point.
It's unwatchable. And honestly, like I said, this is the first year where I was just like, I'm usually such a big basketball fan. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, some of these games are like 170 to 160. It's crazy.
That's an exaggeration.
I don't know that it is. Has somebody, nobody scored 170 points this year?
I think there was one game where somebody hit like 160 maybe.
It's outrageous.
They have sort of legislated defense out of the game, at the same time that the skill level is at its highest in some ways in terms of shooting and pick and roll play. And I am thankful for the Rangers and I hope they make a long playoff run. Because I hope they re-sign Keandre Miller because that's the jersey I want to get.
Yeah.
He's the tall, lonely black man on the Rangers.
Yeah.
By the way, Vincent Trocheck, I said to Laura when he was interviewed during, he won the Stephen McDonald Award. Mm-hmm. Like the
everybody
Courage
knows
Award.
Stephen McDonald.
he was a cop that got shot in the 80s, like a rookie cop. And he was
is that
paralyzed.
True?
Yeah. And that,
no shit.
I got to say.
Cops love hockey.
That's the thing. The cop firefighter fuckfest at hockey games. That's a little annoying to me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's bad enough when sports are like tied into the anthem. Although the Rangers have this guy, this young opera singer who's fucking great.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Have you ever seen him?
I've never been to a Ranger game at the... No, I've never been to a Ranger game.
Let me tell you something. If we get that quarter ticket plan, guess who's got the first ticket that Laura can't make?
I would love to go.
John, but you are getting the second one. You're getting the second one, Mike.
All right.
But no, it's the garden is beautiful. And I know this is rambling, but this is making the fuck fest with the FDNY and the NYPD is like distasteful to me.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, I know there are plenty of people who justifiably think, hey, you know, cops, they protect our neighborhoods. And I like, there's nothing not to like about cops. And I'm like, sure there is.
Oh yeah.
I mean, sure there is, but I get it. You can, you're allowed to have positive feelings to law enforcement. I'm one of those people who says, if you have genuine positive feelings for law enforcement, I get it. Yeah. As a former prosecutor, I was technically law enforcement.
Sure.
But also I get why people don't like the cops. Let's not. And
yeah,
but there's this like cops and firefighters. Let's go Ranger. Can it just be, do I have to be like,
it's so funny too. Cause I was watching a couple weeks ago and they did like an LGBTQ night at the garden for the Rangers. And I was like, they're so full of shit.
Yeah. Well, and to be honest, the leadership at the garden and the Rangers might not be full of shit. Like they might, you know, they might care or think it's important to do.
Yeah.
Because they do know that, like, they probably roll their eyes and goes, you think our fan base is going to dig this? But it's like, but it's the right thing to do.
Of course. Yeah.
So that may be, but I
just think it's funny of all the sports because we know who's in that arena.
All right, guys, don't say the F word tonight.
Yeah, right.
It's queer night at the garden. So we got to be nice to these pillow biting animals. But tomorrow, when the Flyers get here, don't you think I'm going to do this PC woke bullshit. All right. So, you know, I'll have the rainbow sprinkles on the ice cream tonight. All right. I'll be an ally. But tomorrow, those Flyers, you know what? You know what sounds like Flyers? Yeah. Broad Street Bullies, more like Broad Street Butt Humpers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. That was Vinny's uncle.
Yeah. Santino.
Yeah. But the point is, I don't know what the point is. I'm rambling because I thought about talking about Luca all episode. And then pre-show, when I was talking to Mike, I said, do you think the fans will like a lot of specific hockey content? And Mike said, don't you dare. And then I did it.
Yeah.
But I really want to talk about, I mean, we're going to go to break. This is just an opening banter. Yeah. I hope Mike clips the Henrik Lundqvist impression so I can tag the Rangers on Instagram.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And hey, guys. Yeah. What I'm liking today. Anyway. But I thought, in an almost organic way, we mentioned baseball. We mentioned Luka Doncic. We mentioned hockey, police, firefighters. And I thought, you know what? Let's rain on us big parade this episode when we come back from the break. White people. And we're back. Mike, how was that break?
Fantastic.
It was, always. Wasn't it? Yeah. And I had one more point before we talk about white people. We're going to talk about a white person. But another guy I like from the Rangers broadcast team, Sam Rosen. He's the play-by-play guy for MSG. And I actually got a good amount of likes on Rangers Twitter for when he loves saying the name Kaapo Kakko, who is a player on the Rangers. And it's the only name he will never say by itself. Maybe he's too immature. He thinks Kakko will get like his grandkids chuckling. Like, you said Kakko. But he always says, he'll be like, and that's Fox to Zibanejad to Kaapo Kakko. And the goalie for the Rangers, his name is Kaapo Kakkonen. And I just...
For the Rangers?
Excuse me, the Devils.
Oh,
the Devils goalie is Kaapo Kakkonen. And all I wanted, and it happened, it actually happened during a nationally televised game. So Sam Rosen wasn't doing the call.
Oh, no.
It was a call. Kaapo Kakko scores on Kaapo Kakkonen. And I was like, it was almost there. It was almost there. And if it had been a power play goal, he would have come.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, we're done with the hockey talk for now, folks. But watch that Lundqvist clip. Bring a lot of FDNY and FDNY to the show. And boy, are they going to thumbs this one down. I've been thinking a lot about this, Mike. Obviously, in this room, we're 1.5 white people.
Yes.
The new sitcom from Chuck Lorre on CBS. And that was a 2.5 men joke. I don't know if you got it. You just didn't find it funny. Gotcha. But I've been thinking to myself as I look at American society, because I don't think maybe the Civil War was a time when white people felt as delusionally sad for themselves as they do now. Mm. But we're in a real era of white self-pity. And this is not to say there aren't things to be upset about or that people don't go through deep individual struggles. But why the long face, white people? Like, what's wrong? Like, seriously, like, we've talked about already, America in general is really supposed to be, it's not, but it's supposed to be a set of principles, a set of structures. Think of America like like basketball. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what you look like or who you are. If you can get on the court and score more points within the rules than other people, then you'll be good. Then you are a basketball player.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to look like Larry Bird or Michael Jordan or this and that. And we can play jokes off of that. But basically the point is once you do basketball player things, you're a basketball player. And in America, it doesn't matter. It's not supposed to matter what you look like, what your background is, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but there is a sentiment through a lot of this country in white parts of this country, especially the conservative parts, where it's sort of like you've got to look like them, that they have a very fixed image of what America is like. And when other people who don't look like that start to succeed, it starts to feel like failure for them. Mm-hmm. It starts to feel like they're being left out or something is happening. But I'm just thinking about where we are as a country, and is it bad for white people? I had an angry friend who said he feels bad for poor white people. He was trying to be provocative. You know, he was like, those are the people nobody cares about. And I was like, but imagine if Oxy were treated like crack.
Well, right.
Probably worse than it is now.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. And I think that this is one of the things that I think what's happening now that's making a lot of white people upset is that they're used to being the top dog and they're used to never sharing anything ever, really. Especially in like pop culture and all that stuff. And I think the necessity to make things a little more diverse over the last couple of years is bothering a lot of people because they're just not used to having to share. They're not used to this country not doing things specifically for them, yeah. You know? And I think that is where the long face is coming from.
But it's just, I want to speak to any of those FDNY or NYPD guys who are like, this guy does a great fucking Lundquist. I gotta listen to his podcast while I'm cheating on my fucking wife.
Yeah.
I've always said the cheating rate in the NYPD is 109%.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I would just say all the things that white people complain about, it boils down to vibes. You know what I mean? Because yes, there was an opioid epidemic. And when compared to other drug epidemics in America, you guys got the best treatment. It's not about how are we doing relative to somebody who's not on fucking Oxy. It's how is our group of people being treated and cared for and campaigned? Could anybody in the 1980s have campaigned on going to like Brooklyn and going, we got to help the crack addicts. This stuff was pushed in here and the community is under siege and it is tearing apart families. We need to put people into drug treatment and we need to put people, get them help. And we need to go after the government who's pushing crack and the foreign countries who are shipping cocaine. And obviously we did some of that, but in other words, no, it would have been like, are you kidding me? These animals, yes. They're killing each other. They're on drugs, they're welfare. And that was how they were treated. Like, we couldn't have done the same with Oxy, nor should we have.
Yeah.
But what if it had just been like, I ain't dealing with pain. Oh, is pain too much? 10 years in jail, you bitch. Now that seems unconscionable, even to us. Even to people who are on the right side, we're probably still thinking, yeah, but you know, crack was like more violent. I saw New Jack City. There were a lot of bad dudes in this. Like, you know, whereas all these opioid people, they were just like people hurting and on drugs. And I'm like, well, what do you think an unemployed person living in the projects is? You don't think they're hurting?
Right. Right.
And so it's that's just one thing. So I would ask people to say when you talk about the opioid crisis, which is it's not that it's past, but we've sort of dealt with it culturally now. I don't think it's over for lots of people, but it's been dealt with culturally. Fentanyl. Fentanyl, I think, I don't know. I think it's killing more white people. It could be killing black people as well. It could be killing Latinos, but it just seems to always pop up in the same sort of heroin oxy communities.
Yeah.
They're treating that like poison. Like it's a poisoning. Like, I'm sorry, if crack were laced with super crack,
yeah,
would people have been like, they're killing the young black men with this super crack. We've got to do this. They would be like, murder, execute all people found with super crack. Right? Like,
yeah.
So that's just one thing. I just want to get that off the board.
Yeah.
Then it comes to like, let's look at pop culture. Because mm-hmm. that used to be a thing, you know, I think there was some jealousies. I think in terms of sports and music in many ways were dominated. I've always said when you force a community to, you give a community lemons and then they make great lemonade. You can't be like, why is it all black people in the NBA?
Right.
What about we can't play? We can't. Why is it always got to be them?
Yeah.
Why is it, you can't complain about somebody making great lemonade mm-hmm. if all you've given them is lemons for generations. But now look at the spaces that have commonly been disproportionately people of color dominant. Whether it's sports and music, just the major sports and music. Tom Brady is considered the GOAT in football. Mm-hmm. Taylor Swift, as great as Beyonce is, Taylor Swift basically has been dunking on Beyonce's numbers for the last year. If you want to go head to head in terms of like white icon and black icon head to head, Taylor Swift's winning that one. Mm-hmm. The NBA, are we ever going to have a black MVP again?
Yes, we had a black MVP last year.
I'm kidding. Oh. I'm kidding.
I was about to say.
No, of course. I'm just saying, doesn't it feel like that, though? You got Luka. Like, in other words.
I think the NBA is one of the places where it still doesn't feel like that, frankly.
No. But that's what I'm saying is, if you're somebody, if you're a bitter white.
Yeah.
If you're a Trump-loving bitter white who hasn't watched the NBA since Larry Bird retired. Mm-hmm. You got to feel good like, yeah, but look, we got Luka. Look at the two dudes giving them the most business. We got Mac, little Mac from Mike Tyson's Punch Out winning the dunk contest. And so I'm just saying these are all like anecdotal, but they're high profile anecdotal.
Yeah.
Just like when people would talk about like, why aren't black people doing better? They go, well, look at Obama. Look at Oprah. They right. bring out the anecdotes would come out on one side.
Right.
So I'm just saying, if you're looking across pop culture, what's the beef at this point? What's the problem? Because you obviously still kind of dominate institutions and the money and the power in America as a race.
Yeah.
So what's the real problem? Because even anecdotally, you're doing better in music and sports than you've ever done before since integration. And you just sort of have to wonder. And that's when I come, obviously, to our favorite topic, Trump. Where I go, that's why it's at this point that I can say, oh, if you're a Trump supporter, I'm confident in 2024 saying you're a racist because he is your last. And we've talked about this before, but it's like he's your last hope for the fantasy,
right?
For like a thing that doesn't exist. The white man under attack.
Yeah.
He is your Quint, you know? Like instead of Jaws on the board, it's just like a successful black person. Mm-hmm. And in comes Trump screeching the chalkboard going, I'll make you feel better about being white. 11,000 votes in Georgia. And I'll bring back slavery. Jim Crow. The whole damn thing.
The whole damn thing.
Isn't it? But that's kind of like, that's why he's successful.
Yeah.
And I want to get a message out. I have a buddy. He is almost like my token angry conservative buddy. Cause we do get along, but he is the exact, like he is a resentment voter. And I always like, I remember him telling me how much money he got back from taxes under Biden. And how like he got a fucking like Tesla and he got like solar panels because it was like too good a deal to pass up and all these things. And he hates Democrats so much. And he feels like he's under attack. Like when he doesn't get something, like when he doesn't qualify for student loan forgiveness, he's not thinking about white dudes who are getting student loan forgiveness.
Yeah.
It's some sort of blank check to the hood. I like in the vision of some of these people, I think it's like Ed McMahon showing up to a project with a large check going, here, you won white people's money. Like that. It's, I don't know how we break this, because that is why we're in the mess we're in. Hurt white people, delusional, hurt white people feelings.
Yeah.
And this is not, this is, trust me, this may sound like it in this episode. I am not one of these always towing the line, always saying, the oppression. Like I'm not one of those people who's just constantly leaning into every talking point about like how our society, this, this, and that. But we are in an inflection point, it feels, and we have been brought to the brink. Many issues have brought us to the brink, but I think it is scared, delusional white people who have brought the country to the edge of wherever we are now. And any thoughts on that before I go back and speak for another 28 minutes in a row?
I think there's a lot of truth to it. I think that, I just think we're going through a lot of natural change. And I think that anytime there's natural change and, you know, now in my lifetime, in my 20s, essentially my early 30s, like to see, I think for a long time, white people just figured that like post civil rights movement, we were just all good. You know, Obama's in the White House. Yeah. There's some like some racism that we just kind of don't talk about as much. Everybody's like a little racist. So the country's fine and everybody's happy and it's all good. Like, I guess that was kind of like the thought post 9/11 or whatever. We're all united as one against terrorism. We're all Americans. And I think that like the police brutality, the wave of high profile police brutality cases post like 2014, I think was proof really that like we're not all good. And I think that Trump coming along during all of that stuff was basically him reassuring the white people in this country that are going to vote for him, like, no, we're fine. We're fine. We're going to go back to the way that it was, where like we ran the show. Don't worry about it. It's all good. These uppity BLM, and I hate to use that word when I say it, what I say, but yeah. Like, I think that those people are viewing all of that through a lens where they're looking at it all as if these people are like, rioting, that they're unhappy for the sake of being unhappy,
ungrateful. Is a big word that comes out. I mean, that's, when I look, it's like when people talk about the violent, the BLM riots after George Floyd.
Right.
And then try to couch the, like, in other words, when people were tired of black men being and black women being killed unjustly by police, they burned down some stores.
Right.
When white people were upset over a fair election, they tried to take over the government.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Like, in other words, it was so easy for, like, this is when people say, and this is the thing I also hate when people are like, Donald Trump lied to these people. Fuck those people. Like, you can't take a shit on Nancy Pelosi's desk if you're already not a terrible person.
Yeah, right.
Like, you weren't just at your prayer group right. One morning and said, wait, what? Our election's been stolen. Well, I have to go defecate on Nancy Pelosi's desk.
Yeah.
But I just think that is where we're at now. And I'm trying to both reassure any listeners who are, you know, proud, strong white people. It's pretty good still. You got it pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, man, I go through this with people. I have conversations with people about this type of stuff all the time. I really think that I have it with like hyper liberal people too. It doesn't seem like anybody's really happy, to be honest, whichever side of the spectrum that you're on. But like at the end of the day, we still live in America and it's still great, especially if you are a white person. Like, it still kind of fucking rocks. Like, there's a lot of, you know, as a person with white skin, even though I don't identify as a white person because I'm ethnic, I still don't think about a lot of things that I'm sure black people have to think about on a day-to-day basis. Dealing with police, walking around, you know, being black. I know it's different. And I think it's weird that there are people that don't think it is. So we do still have it pretty good in this country. We got to be honest. I don't know what's going to happen in the next 4 years once Daddy Trump is back. But
and you're still convinced Trump is going to be back?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm 100% convinced.
Okay. I'm riding with Biden.
I'm not pulling for Trump.
I know. But I'm saying it's going to be Biden.
You've been traveling this country, haven't you?
Yeah.
I mean, you're out there and you still don't feel differently.
Well, the people who come to my shows, the very few who come to my shows, they know what I do for the most part.
Of course. Right.
So I'm seeing the most left wing of Utah.
Yeah, sure. Sure. It's fair.
But it's just we are in. If there are any. You have to reality is not what Trump is selling, and reality for white people in this country is there were black people who worked in factories that got closed down also in the industrial Midwest.
Sure. Right.
A lot. In fact, a bunch of them Definitely. Moved from the South for those jobs.
Right.
So it's like, but this, it's once again, it's the, because of how they vote, they're treated as this like unicorn, uniquely forgotten class of people. But also some of that is in the mind of the beholder. Like Trump, when he says, you have been forgotten. Well, most of the people, they kind of get what he's talking about.
Right.
But it's like, but he's not speaking to every working class person. He's speaking to that thought of like, nobody, it's...
Dude, I really do think it. I think to me, and maybe it's because I think and work in like an arena where culture matters a lot to me, but I really do think it comes down to culture. And that's where you can see it primarily, because I do think for up until probably about 10 years ago, everything was made for white people. And if it was made for a black audience, it was like specifically black. It was like Girlfriends, or it was like fucking a Martin Lawrence movie, or like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't, there were very few crossover type shows like The Fresh Prince or Cosby, or, you know. And I think that now you're seeing a lot of big media companies and studios and everything, for better or for worse, whether it's a better product or not is not the important thing. I think that people that are white in this country finally feel like they're, is an understanding of corporate America, that there are dollars to be gotten from minorities in this country. And they've pivoted a lot of their focus to because the white people are going to spend their money anyway. I think that they've economically pivoted to a place where they're going to say like, well, if diversity is important to these people that don't feel like they're being represented in this country, then we're going to take a shot at representing them. And, you know, I think that white people are finally like, what do you mean this isn't completely for us?
Right.
This was always for us.
And it's, and that's what you're giving, or what you're articulating, I think, is more of a subconscious thought.
Yeah.
Than a, it's not, this is ours. It's like, but in their mind, it's a subconscious thing.
Yeah.
I remember my mom saying, you know, my brother was the editor in chief of the Daily Northwestern, Northwestern Journalism School, their school paper. And he was talking about an article and he said, oh yeah, this guy, he was the third black editor in chief of the Daily Northwestern. And my mom said, who was the first? And my brother said, me. And wow. she said, but you're half black.
Wow.
It wasn't a point of contention.
Yeah.
It's like, that's how my mom, and my brother, as I joke, is more Derek Jeter black. I'm the Rashida Jones of the family, where it's like, you got to tell somebody what you are. But my brother is clearly, and then he's got a black wife. So as the joke goes on half blackface, it's like a guy with blue eyes and a blue tie. You're like, wow, that tie really makes your eyes pop. And I'm like, yeah, your blackness is popping, dude. But it was not her trying to diminish. It's like, that's how she saw it. Like my mom is like, I've often said, I have heard prejudicial things said in my family, in my outer family. And I said, but nobody in my family was ever racist enough to even come close to vote for a Republican. Mm. And I'm like, because you can have individual prejudices here and there, or things that you're ignorant on, or things that you haven't outgrown. But in the macro sense, you got to be a next level delusional to like, feel that you need, like, you need the president. If you're a white person in America, you are lost if you don't have your president. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're at. It's like this delusion of like being lost. And I remember, I mean, I've had people say to me, like, you know, looking at the art section, it's like, it feels like there's so much more black coverage of stuff now, like in the, and I was like, well, it also could have been, there was not enough before. A correction doesn't always mean an overcorrection. It can feel like an overcorrection because it's simply a correction.
I think that's the elegant way to say what I was trying to say about like Hollywood.
And
Hollywood, man, it's really fascinating because I love old movies. I'm a TCM guy. I, you know, it was always on in my house as a kid.
Gone with the Wind, most accurate depiction of the South or just very accurate?
I wasn't going to, with Gone with the Wind, but the example that I always use is Singing in the Rain.
Oh, I love it.
Which is a great movie, and it's widely considered one of the greatest movies ever made. I think it's my mom's favorite or one of her favorite movies, so I've seen it a ton. And I watched it fairly recently, and I think it was during, it might have been during the pandemic when there was a more of a spotlight on kind of like the racial issues that the country was having. Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of watching it, trying to pay more attention to the diversity in the movie. And I don't know why I was surprised, but I was surprised that there's not one black person on screen. I don't think movie.
They didn't want to get their hair wet.
But yeah, dude, it's just it is so, it's weird because I do think that it's racist through the lens of today. Mm-hmm. But it speaks to the bigger problem that in their mind, it wasn't a proactive racist thing that they did. They just didn't give a fuck and they didn't think about that. And because they didn't think about that, they didn't even say, let's get one. Can we get one black person in the shot? Right. Can we have a black person play a waiter? Like, can we have a black person do anything in this movie? And that's the thing.
I think
until there's no progress made with any of that stuff. And this is also the part of the point. White people are just like, well, this was America. This was, look at my America, all these white faces and blonde hair and Gene Kelly and all this stuff. And the truth is, it's like almost, you know, 80 years later, or however, you know, it looks different and it should look different.
Right. I think, and that's one of the things, like I've gotten in arguments with people, black and white, about the Rooney Rule in the NFL, as an example, where they say, oh, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't. And now here's the thing. It does do something sometimes. It is not like a 0% success thing, but it's a very clumsy, inartful way of trying to, for those that don't know, the Rooney Rule was a rule put in by Rooney Mara's granddad.
Yep.
The actress. Boy,
yep.
Side note, Joaquin Phoenix definitely doesn't fucking like sports.
No, right? No, he's not a sports guy.
He does not like sports. He does not like that the football is made out of leather.
No.
He hates it. He hates sports. I just know it. I don't have to know it to not.
Yeah.
And it's like, you just married the cute, talented granddaughter of two NFL franchises.
Yep.
Her one granddad owned the Steelers and her other granddad owned the Giants.
It is wild.
And it's hey, grandpa, here's my vegan, crooked backed method actor boyfriend who hates sports talk.
Yeah.
I mean, she could have pulled good dick as if she were homely.
Yeah.
But it's like, hey, you're cute and like an Oscar nominee. Hey. Oh, yeah. And what? What's that? Two billionaire granddads who own two NFL teams.
Yep.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
But the Rooney Rule basically said, because there was such a lack of diversity in coaching, you had to interview a minority applicant when you had a coaching vacancy. And the goal there, and I said this to my buddy who was like very much like, it's stupid, does nothing. It's tokenism. And I go, except it does sometimes get people's names in the mix. It does make people aware. It does elevate some people who maybe in an old boys network wouldn't even get elevated. Uh-huh. It's not even call it like not perfect is like an understatement.
Yeah.
But the problem with this country, I think in general, and with the way the sort of majority of white people, and I say the majority of white people, because white people haven't voted for a Democrat in a presidential election since Lyndon Johnson, 1964. Mm. That was the last time the white vote in a presidential election was majority Democrat. It's been won by Republicans ever since. Mm-hmm. That kind of 60 year span is a good body of data to sort of say, well, you know, you can sort of say white people as a block,
right?
In terms of just where they voted. If you're not willing to, first you have to be delusional. Then you have to ignore facts when presented with facts. So like when I say there's a problem with diversity in NFL coaching, and I'm using this as a small example for a lot of the problems we have in society, well, you have two people. People go, yeah, it is weird that the league is like 70% black and like 5% black coaches at whatever time the rule went in. It might have been like one black coach. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at that the other way to look at that and go, well, maybe they're just not good at coaching.
Right.
And it's like, well, you have, now you're believing another delusion to satisfy your first delusion, which is like, this is our thing.
Right.
And you look at the NFL, and obviously I think in our lifetime, your lifetime, I don't know how long I have, but is now you see they finally, like, half the league is black quarterbacks, half the starting quarterbacks are black.
Right.
That was a long time coming, but now it's like, maybe then you will see in a generation, now there's been enough on-field leadership, maybe that plays out, maybe it doesn't, you know, but that's now that all these barriers are sort of beyond broken, they're not even barriers anymore. You want to see, does it become something in the front office and beyond that? But there's a large segment of the country that will say, and I'm using football once again as the example, but we'll go, I mean, I don't know that they weren't always coaches, or maybe they didn't want to coach, mm-hmm. or maybe they were, you know, they got all that money from playing. Why do you want to, maybe they didn't want to coach. Maybe they, so you like, and then you take that America at large where yes, the solutions like the Rooney rule, maybe you think affirmative action was, I think there are intellectual arguments against affirmative action. I'm not saying I agree with them, but you can make a real argument for and against. Mm-hmm. So if you think some of these measures are clumsy, I think the Trump America, which is 70 million plus, they don't even subscribe to the issues of whether you want to call it, maybe systemic racism is like a buzzword now, but it's like if you say historical racism, like I would say to somebody, when did it stop?
Right.
You know, because I remember I got into a thing with Adam Carolla, friendly, but his fans were not so friendly. On
no
Twitter.
Shit. No surprise. Yeah. What a surprise.
Well, the reason I don't go on the show is not him. It's his, right. It's his fans. Obviously he is strayed far right, but he was always nice to me and I still think he's funny, but
yeah,
they, you know, he had mentioned like these people having success. And I said, well, Harry Belafonte became the first musical artist to sell 1 million copies of a record. First platinum artist in American history. That was in like 1952. Mm-hmm. Would anybody say that things were perfect then?
No.
Probably not.
Well, it depends on.
No, but you get what I'm saying. Like, in other words, you know, I think you could chip away a portion of those people. It's like, well, yeah, no, back in the 50s, it wasn't like it is today. Right. I go, okay, so we agree it wasn't when the first platinum artist was a black guy. Although that speaks to a certain level of success and opportunity.
Yeah.
It doesn't, many people would agree, well, that wasn't the point. Mm-hmm. Thurgood Marshall gets on the Supreme Court. Was that?
I don't think anybody gives a shit.
No, I know. But then Obama is the next big thing.
Well, I would say, I'd say the next big thing. No, when did Thurgood Marshall get on?
No, sir. Kennedy put Thurgood Marshall on. No, I'll tell you right now what the big, in terms of politics.
Because I would, okay.
64, it's 64 is the Civil Rights Act. 65 is the Voting Rights Act.
Yep.
As Lyndon Johnson said, we might have lost the South for a generation. Well, you lost the South forever.
Yeah.
And that was, what's scary is that when you make me think, when you said, well, not everybody would agree. Well, when you realize that the Supreme Court in 2013, I think it was 2013, helped undo a critical provision of the Voting Rights Act. So it's literally like, let's go back to 1965.
Right.
Before this law that was an overreach or is no longer necessary was passed. Though that was when the South was lost to Democrats forever.
Yeah.
Obama is the next thing in terms of politics, because what I've been fascinated by reading a lot of things is that the two things that have like radicalized the white evangelical church, mm-hmm. The two things were Obama's election, which shocked the shit out of them in a disturbing way. That's why they were so susceptible to the Muslim, secret Muslim, and the Muslim is going to take over and
right.
burn our churches. Like, fanatical shit. That's how cloistered they were, that they were like, yeah, I it makes sense to me
right.
that this Harvard-educated half-white guy with a nice family would want to burn my church down and bring Sharia law.
Right.
And Trump fed that. He like fed that, and more people kind of came to that. They might not have bought into the Obama's a Muslim terrorist, but they were able to buy into the, but this guy is different. I don't think he feels the same way about my country that I do. And COVID was the thing that it was almost like Obama got it started, their discomfort. It brought it to a new level because this was shocking change to them. This Obama's election should have been the, like we've climbed a mountaintop in American history. Mm-hmm. And to other people, it felt like you've burned my house to the ground and I have to start over. Yeah. And COVID was like the thing that was like, let's fucking make people who are already on the edge and not living in the real world, let's give them isolation and a pandemic mm-hmm. and see what happens there. And those two things led to like, you know, further radicalization of white evangelical churches. And I just think I'm obviously not trying to reach any of these fucking people. I don't know if any of them will ever listen or watch, but I think I think if any white people out there who think, you know, the sky is falling, I'm here to reassure you, you piece of shit, that America is still yours. And in fact, you've made great strides in the worlds of sports and entertainment, that there's really no reason to be sad and no reason to vote for Trump. He can't save you. He doesn't like you. He's just furthering your delusion that your America is under attack, and it's not your America. It's just America. So that was rambling and weird and sometimes fun, but we'll be back with comedy talk.
And now, from the Slickback Studios newsroom in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, here is Scott Pelley with a Rain on Your Parade special report.
This is Scott Pelley on assignment for 60 Minutes with this week's Punchdown of the Week. JL, when he was traveling in Chicago, posted a picture of a building that said Trans Union, and he wrote, Chicago really is a pro-labor town. At which point someone on his Facebook page replied, for trans people. JL.
Thank you, Scott. Oh, God. Scott. It's been a few weeks. There he goes. I mean, I wasn't.
No,
even,
I'm actually still.
You're still here, Scott. It's good to have you back, man. We've had a couple wild punch downs in the last few weeks.
JL had said to me, he said, Scott, if you're not busy with your personal trainer this week, right. if you could come in because we've had some colorful characters.
Yeah.
Doing the punch down.
Yeah, yeah. It's good to have you back, man.
Okay, I'm gonna go bench press now.
Go bench press. Yeah, it's good to see you. JL, I know. How was your piss? You always miss these guys.
Yeah. Well, it's
Scott was here. Scott Pelley.
No, I'd asked him. I had sent him a message right. saying it's. Yeah, I don't want people to think we're like losing control here.
Right.
We love Stevie Van Sant. Vinny is his own thing, but
yeah,
bring us back home. Bring us back to you know ground level.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was I found that to be a fun one because to me. When you see the words trans union and I say Chicago really is a pro-labor town, mm-hmm. It's only two words. So obviously the union applies to trans people, even though that's not what it is. That was a joke. And then somebody wrote for trans people. And I didn't reply to that. But yeah, that felt like a great punch down of the week
yeah.
because it was just sort of like, oh, yeah, I forgot to say that part.
Yeah.
I forgot to spell out the joke.
Yeah.
That would have made it so much better. Classic punch down. So this week's special is one I watched on Amazon Prime, Tig Notaro, Hello Again. Now, I had watched her sort of famous one. I think Louis C.K. had at one point called her special, like, you know, from like a decade ago, like one of the best hours I've ever seen. And it was the one where she had taken off her shirt after having like a double mastectomy.
Yeah.
And performed for like half the show with her shirt off. It wasn't as jarring as you'd think. Like, you know, it wasn't like, but it was, you know, I just remember watching and going, nothing about this soul special is really making me laugh. She's mm-hmm. too dry. It's like there's shock value, but I'm not shocked. It's just a little weird mm-hmm. kind of. So I said, but you know, she's a big name in comedy. And, you know, I can't just, I want to see different people. I don't want to just be like, I love that guy. Let me watch his special. Or I know that's going to suck. Let me watch that. It'll be fun to shit on. This yeah. one, I was genuinely like, I had heard a couple people say it was good. I loved it.
Really?
Loved it. I said, yeah, did you think I was going to say hated it?
Yes, I definitely
yeah,
did.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm getting good at this, Mike. I was working while it was on. And for about 14 minutes, I played it. And I was like, this isn't really making me laugh. And I said, you know what, JL? Gone are the days where you're just a passive cultural commentator. Mm-hmm. People listen to you for your takes, for your honesty. Mm-hmm. But it can't be an honest take if you're not honestly listening.
Yeah.
So I rewound it to the beginning and kind of watched it a little more earnestly. And I loved it. And it was so different. Each bit. And here's the one thing I will say. I don't know if a new comic, not new, but an unknown comic could get away with what she did, which is like the 3-minute setups and the storytelling vibe. Mm. You kind of have to be there as a Tig Notaro fan, I think, to buy in. You know, it shouldn't be that way, but I'm being just honest. I feel like,
sure.
But each one paid off. You know, it's kind of just, she's very dry and very like, hey, but they were like really paying off. And I don't want to go into too many of the bits, but there was one about her being rescued by a firefighter and being like, I kind of get it now, mm-hmm. you know, because she's obviously a very well-known lesbian. Mm-hmm. But then her discussing with her wife that like they have different taste in men, the way she did it. I found myself explaining this to Laura. She was like, should I watch it? I was like, I think you'd like it. But I was like, it's the first comedian I've ever tried to retell their jokes. Mm-hmm. And I was like failing because mm-hmm. it was like, oh, that's me kind of speaking to how great it was. It was like, you can do this. Like you have perfected whatever your technique is. It might not be for everybody, but you've perfected what you do. So that when I try to retell a joke of yours, I sound stupid. And I'm like, you just have to watch it. Mm-hmm. And she did this bit at the end where I'm spoiling it a little bit. I'm not going to spoil everything about it, but she wheels out a piano. And I was like, huh, she can't play the piano. Mm. But she spends like her last 12 minutes like playing the piano and telling this story about being at a party with Adele. Mm-hmm. It was so funny. But it was so like I was blown away because it was such a pleasant surprise. And I'm glad I rewound it because mm-hmm. that could have been one of those ones where I was just like, yeah, I don't know. It was that good. And so everybody, you know, if you have Amazon Prime, go watch Tig Notaro's Hello Again. It's different. It's not some high paced, high energy. It's also not like Todd Barry where it's like intentionally down like as a choice. It's just kind of conversational and chill, and then she every 3 minutes hits you. And if you can give into it, if you can, as Owen Wilson said in Zoolander, just give into the power of the T. If you can give into the power of the Tig Notaro, man, you're gonna laugh. You're gonna be sitting there and you're gonna laugh. Anyway, guys, from Henrik Lundqvist, Sam Rosen, Owen Wilson, I've been JL Covan. Obviously, please rate and review on your favorite podcast platform. Comment in any way you want on the YouTube
please.
Episode. Let's get that engagement up. Share it. You don't have to share this episode, but if, like I said, no. Oh, okay. I guess that was funny. I'm saying share an episode that you really liked. You know, share this with your favorite, with your least favorite white person. Share this episode with that one white guy at work that you think is a total piece of shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's organically build this, keep building it. And obviously just go to my website for Patreon show info. I'm in Syracuse, April 25th. My birthday is April 24th. So if you're short on money, spreading the gospel of this podcast and getting other people to listen would be a nice birthday present that costs nothing. So until next week, bye Mike. And I will see you next Thursday.